Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, the host again from Coins Plus in Spokane, the sponsor of the show. Coins Plus, it can be reached at 444-0044, locally outside toll-free, 877-TAP-COIN. That's 877-827-2646, or as always, through our website at coinsplus.com. Coins Plus has been in business about 20 years, and we're always involved in buying and selling all forms of rare coins, precious metals, all forms of gold, scrap gold, diamonds, jewelry. We do pay for quality product as well. It's not all scrap, but if it is, it is. We specialize in better quality diamonds. We buy all diamonds, but we resell nicer quality diamonds to our clients. I can tell you, folks, that the jewelry business in general is an extraordinarily high markup business, and so what we've brought to the market is wholesale diamonds to the public, which really our prices are better than you can find anywhere in the nation. And we educate you and so on and so forth. Coins Plus also offers one of the highest rated privately held depository services, I say, in the Northwest United States, probably in the top 10 or 20 nationwide. I don't know exactly what's out there. But I do know that it's the facility that we're in was built from the ground up specifically for that purpose, for the purpose of security and confidentiality and impenetrability, if there is such a word. But we've done everything we can to try to build a facility that is highly secure. We'll just leave it at that. People do get the comfort of anonymity, confidentiality when they invest with us, as well as when they store with us. The cost of deposit box is usually people always expect it to be more for some reason, but they're not. They start at about $60 a year, and they go up from there. You can get, you know, $1 million worth of product a lot of times in a $100 a year box. Not that you're going to buy $1 million, but just as to give you a relevant reference point, the pricing is very reasonable. And a lot of people are choosing now to forego 401ks and just save metals. We're seeing that over and over. The reason for that is simple. The 401k racket it's a scandal. And here's how it works. You're putting in pre-tax investment. Pre-tax dollars are going into your 401k or an IRA, which sounds great. They say, look, you won't pay tax until you get it out. Well, folks, the bottom line is you will pay tax. For some reason, the American mindset, and by the way, this is a unique investment philosophy globally. The American mindset is if I can procrastinate, somehow I'm winning. Think about it. No payments and no interest until 2099 and all these stupid programs they run. And everybody's like, oh, it's interest free. No, actually, it's not, folks. The way it works, if you ever notice, they'll say, either have your sales tax paid by us or you can have an interest free loan until 2028. Well, the point is when they do these quote unquote interest free financing, there's a discount taken out of the contract. So if you buy $1,000 worth of furniture, when the furniture company hands the contract after the off to the loan company will discount, depending on the program and how long it's interest-free, the loan company might discount 10% off the top, which means the furniture company tells you you're getting $1,000 worth of furniture. They're really being paid $900. That's why they say, well, you can either have interest-free financing or we'll pay your sales tax. Well, your sales tax is just another discount of 8-point-whatever%. As I've said before, in the financial world, there are no free lunches. And folks, just, you know, to kind of go on to that tangent as a believer, very, very important stewardship with the wealth that you are given. You need to understand that God will bless you financially. He can bless you in many, many ways, and we are blessed in so many ways, but finances can be a way He chooses to bless you. It's not a guarantee, but it's possible. We know that he says that if we're faithful with little, he will give us much. And so stewardship is everything. We have absolutely got to handle ourselves in a financially responsible manner. We have, you know, there's all these scriptures of, you know, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. Which, you know, sinful wealth, ill-gotten gains, as Proverbs says, are soon lost. It's just natural law. And when you read the Bible and you read Proverbs and you read these things, the thing that you really want to understand is God's laws and God's rules are true, okay? You talk to anybody pretty much of any faith and non-faith, they do agree what goes around comes around. Many of them believe in karma. But, and you know what? They're right. I've mentioned on the show, I had a lady call me one time, just come unglued that I use the word karma. Well, if people around the world observe what I call natural law, okay, we all know about physical law. We know about the laws of thermodynamics. We know that things are in constant a constant process into a state of chaos. We know about gravity. We know how light waves work. We can measure, you know, the velocity of light, and we've got all these different physical properties we can measure. But God made natural law as well. That is the law of consequence, the law of the unseen. If you live your life a certain way, you will reap certain things. A lot of times in our eyes, we don't see it. That's why Solomon in Ecclesiastes said over and over, you know, the wicked man prospers and the righteous fails or whatever. He wasn't saying that that's a fixed fact. He was saying that it can be very disparaging at times. I've gone through those situations, I'll just put it that way, where, you know, I've had people steal from me and, you know, I've watched them kind of get away with it. I have a tendency not to prosecute for years, and I just kind of let people go, which is, you know, because I figured it's all God's money anyway. But, you know, you watch people's lives, and but then again, I have seen the, you know, God's truths come through strong. Like Psalms 37 says, over and over and over, the wicked will perish, the righteous will prevail. It's all God's natural law. Believe it, okay? Stewardship is a big part of that. There is a natural return on resources when we behave properly, when we function properly, and we've got to be good stewards. There are certain personality traits that are not pleasing to God. One of those, shockingly enough, is hoarding, okay? There's saving and then there's hoarding. The difference is saving is like a purposeful, constructive accumulation of wealth. Hoarding is an obsessive, self-centered, secretive behavior. The one when I mentioned I've had people that stole from me, I had one employee who was with me about 15 years. He was very key player. And he had Asperger's, and he hoarded. He hoarded and hoarded and hoarded. He was paid a very, very generous salary, and he couldn't help himself. He just hoarded. He hoarded our products in the store. He hoarded stuff that he was taking. He hoarded things in his life. And it was driven by greed. And that's the thing. Hoarding is driven by greed. And saving is driven by a desire to do good. It's driven by hope. Hoarding is driven by fear. Saving is driven by hope. And you know, the thing is, folks, a lot of people, let's be honest, think that the reason that they come here and put all their money into metals is because the big ones come in. Hey, what happens when they destroy the dollar and all these things? And that's, you know, those are things that could very well happen. There are things that in one form or another will happen in our lifetime. And I really, honestly, truly, sincerely believe that we have to see a form of unraveling of the U.S. dollar at some point. Call it a reset, call it what you want. When we have got the amount of debt that is equivalent to $67,000 for every man, woman, child in America. And by the way, folks, that is just our deficit. That is just the currency that has been created. Now, you back that up and you say only 1 out of 5 people pay taxes. Okay, so now you take that number times 5 and you're at $330,000 in deficit per tax-paying citizen. Well, you and I both know that's never going to get paid off. Here's what's worse. We go to what is called unfunded liabilities, and those are debts we owe that we're not getting out of. In other words, if you or I said, how much debt do you have? You would add up. You can look at it two ways. You can say, well, $3,000 a month. Or you can look at it and say, you add up your mortgage and your credit card bills and your cars and all that. That's how much debt you really owe, is it not? The payment is just a symptom of the debt. Our deficit is the payment, basically. It's like saying, well, I have this much cash that I have borrowed to make payments on my obligations. That's the deficit. Our deficit is quickly approaching $20 trillion, a number that if you think you fathom, you do not. If you stacked $1 bills, a trillion $1 bills would go to the moon and back something like 6 times. I don't remember the number, but it's absolutely absurd. It's a number you cannot comprehend. The deficit or the unfunded liabilities, that's the debt that you really owe, okay? That's like if you add up your mortgage and all that stuff. These are your long-term obligations you can't get out of. You have to pay them back. Our current unfunded liabilities are about 9 times our deficit, which is all caused by the 9-to-1 lending ratio of the Federal Reserve. Our unfunded liabilities are around $180 trillion. That includes Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, you know, on down the list you go. So you start to do the math, folks, and it is absolutely unbelievable. Our unfunded liabilities are approximately $300,000 per person in America. But again, there's only 1 out of 5 people that pays taxes. So our unfunded liabilities are around, I think I did that wrong, actually. I apologize. So our deficit is about $67,000. I cut it in half. Okay, I don't want to confuse you with the math. I'll keep it simple. Our deficit, the $20 trillion, is $67,000 for every man, woman, and child, or $330,000 per taxpayer. Okay? The unfunded liabilities is the numbers times 9. So you take 67,000 times 9, which gets you right up to about $600,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. And then when you stretch that out to the 1 out of 5, you are sitting at, you know, we'll just keep it simple, about $3 million for every tax-paying citizen in America that you are obligated to over time. Absolutely, unequivocally, no possibility to ever be paid off. Okay, so what happens? What are your options in America? There's hyperinflation. There's bankruptcy or default or creation of wealth to such an extent that every single person paying off $3 million in debt's no big deal. But really, that's hyperinflation again, because no one's there. If it got to the point where all the taxpayers could pay $3 million, that's hyperinflation, because that money would no longer buy anything. So basically, we have two choices. We have hyperinflation or bankruptcy. So you have to look at it from those two perspectives. And you will see those in a microcosm at all times. You will see the government will need over time to begin to renege on some of its debt. And what it does is it begins through the socialistic mindset, the Marxist mindset. They take more and more from the wealthy and they give to the poor. Giving to the poor adds to the unfunded liabilities. Taking from the rich, folks, the bottom line is it doesn't even dent our debt. It's a lie when they say, oh, we need to pay our fair share. You know, it's wrong. It doesn't get the job done. It doesn't do the trick. It doesn't even dent a percent. If they confiscated all the wealth of every billionaire in America, it wouldn't even pay off 1 year's debt. It wouldn't even pay half of it. It wouldn't even touch the debt. So paying our fair share is malarkey. It's just a way to impose Marxism and socialism. They have an entire cross-section of society that's brainwashed. When you see this new generation that is protesting and yelling after not voting, and they don't understand the Constitution, and they don't understand anything, these people have absolutely been deceived by our school systems. They're being lied to by our media, and they are a lost generation. We are looking at a lost generation. I have a lot of friends I've spoken to about this. Very important people at the tops of very big corporations. This is a fact. I have a daughter who is a human resources specialist for a very, very large international engineering firm with thousands of employees. I have friends who own small businesses that have a few dozen employees. I have a friend who runs a huge international implement company where he rents huge, huge equipment, massive cranes and mining equipment, etc. And I could go down the list. One thing that we're hearing from all these people is that 20-something-year-old generation is all but lost. There may be some good ones in there, I'm sure, but I too have experienced this. I interview these guys, and before you even find, they find out what the job is. They're like, how much am I going to get paid? How much time am I going to get off? Can I work 30 hours a week? I mean, how hard's the work? I'm not going to be expected to, can I text while I'm at work? Can I email? Is it okay if I get my emails at work? And what kind of personal time do I get off? And do I get my birthday off? And I mean, these people, this is stuff I've seriously dealt with in interviews. And I've told them, don't worry, money's never the issue. We will get to that if we make an offer. And they'll go back to it and back to it and back to it. And it's kind of hard because that generation is not a really good hiring pool, is what I'm hearing from people. So they got to go to people in their 30s and 40s. Well, guess what? They're getting older. They're maybe not interested in entry-level employment. And so we are literally losing a whole section of America. This is a section of America that's been groomed by getting participation trophies. You know, when you play soccer, well, everybody gets a trophy, right? I mean, folks, and we're like, well, that's cute. Little Sarah got a trophy. Isn't that? No. Folks, that's not reality. Reality is there's winners and losers. It's just the way of life. Some people do better than others. Sometimes life isn't fair. Sometimes it sucks. But I'll tell you what, when you hear coaches say, well, we're just playing for fun, you know, I understand, yes, that should be the most important thing, but winning is awesome. And how do you become better? If you're out playing a sport and they say, you know what, don't even worry about competing. Don't worry about whether you score a goal or not. Don't even worry about it. Just have fun. Just go run around the field like a bunch of chickens with your head cut off and just have a good time. Folks, that is not reality. That is not what the Bible teaches. I mean, we have got scriptures I was looking at here a little bit earlier when I was looking at some stuff. I mean, you know, think of this kind of stuff. Here's the God of the Bible. So we go to Joshua, I think it is 22:8, you know, and we've got 22:7. Now to the one half tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given a possession of Bashan, but to the other half, Joshua gave a possession among their brothers westward beyond the Jordan. So when Joshua sent them away to their tents, he blessed them and said, return to your tents with great riches and very much livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, iron, and very many clothes. Divide the spoil of your enemies with your brother. God said, crush them and take what they have. Ouch. That doesn't sound very Christ-like. This is the God of the Bible, folks. You know, and God was not a predatory. The Israeli people were never a predatory people, ever. But when they had to compete, you better watch out. There's some pretty cool stories of victory, right? Ferocious in battle, magnanimous in victory. That is what we want to be. We have to teach our kids to win and teach our kids to lose. And we hope that they're going to like winning a lot better than losing. We hope they learn to succeed instead of fail. And we hope that they become a good example of the parable of talents that God gave them, and that they use that to the absolute, complete, and total benefit of the kingdom of God. It glorifies God, and honestly, it makes our lives better. I mean, God says crystal clear throughout the Bible, live this way and life will be good. There is karma. There is natural law handed down by God. It's unquestionable. So when people kick back, hey, God's doing it all, I don't need to do squat. You know what? There's a spirit you can have like that, but you better have a work ethic that's second to none. If you are a believer and you carry the name of Christ, stand out for good. You better be the hardest working guy or woman. You need to be wise. You need to be a leader. You need to be good. You need to step up. And I'm not talking about doing it to get glory from other men. You are working as unto the Lord, but you've got to have the passion and the enthusiasm that is reflective of a child of the God of the universe. And you will reap what you sow. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. He who sows to his flesh will what? From the flesh reap corruption. That's when I was talking about the hoarder. You're sowing to your flesh. But he who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Hope, right? To the flesh, corruption. Spirit, eternal life, hope. You look forward to good, positive benefits. This is the way God made things. But there is only one way. There's only one right road. That right road includes hard work. That right road includes integrity and character. And that is where we're struggling with our children, because we've taken what is Marxism/atheism and called it human secularism, and now we wonder how we lost the generation. This is probably, folks, I would suspect, the only time in American history that people are protesting in the streets to object to a landslide, fairly run, unrigged Democratic election in the United States of America's history. We've had rivalries and hard times. And when you see Trump reaching out, Ted Cruz, Mitt Romney, okay? He called Ted Cruz Lion Ted. I absolutely, that was deplorable, as Hillary would put it. Deplorable, unacceptable, unreasonable, wrong behavior. Donald Trump did some very ferocious things. Ferocious in battle, magnanimous in victory. I was talking to a friend of mine last night who is a Montana boy, but somehow he's centrist, middle, lefty kind of, and his wife's very left. And we were talking about the election, and he goes, he said, I had my pencil hovering over Donald Trump's bubble, and he goes, I went down and I colored in Gary Johnson, the independent, the libertarian, and I said, why'd you do that? He's kind of a goof. And he goes, well, I was just so afraid of what would happen if my wife found out I voted for Trump. He married a very extremely liberal person. And he said, she's freaking out. She's one of these that's freaking out. I'm like, why? Well, he said so many things that are misogynist and racist. And, he's a good friend of mine, so I didn't get into the, we didn't get out our hatchets. But I just said, if you put anybody under the pressure cooker that Donald Trump endured for 16 months. Now, granted, he dished it out well, but you know what? He could take it, right? And we always say they can dish it out, but they can't take it. Trump could take it. They say he's thin-skinned, but you know what? The guy fought back. He didn't die. He didn't crawl away whining. Folks, can you even fathom, if you watch this election, there's never been anything like it in the history of the America, at least. And I'm telling you, the man stood strong, he stood tall, and he finished the race a lot better than he started it. By the end of the race, he was not the same man. If he got to start the race over as the man he ended the race as, he would have won by a bigger landslide because he learned and grew. And his kids kept saying, "This is not my dad." They've broken him. They've basically beaten him to the pulp. And, you know, we look at Donald Trump. People sometimes have a tendency to vilify and lose the empathy for humanity that should exist and to undergo all the constant attacks and criticism, which continues with the media now. He won the election. He's basically doing his job. He's building a cabinet. I told my friend, I said, he asked me, you know, he respects me and I respect that. He knows I'm maybe a tad conservative. And he said, "What do you think's going to happen?" I said, "I'm going to tell you what's going to happen." I said, "Donald Trump is probably going to be one of the best presidents we've ever had." I said, "He's probably going to do phenomenal things. He's going to surround himself with incredible people." I said, "He takes it so serious. If you saw his acceptance speech, he was just soaked in humility." And that's, like I said, magnanimous in victory. It's important that we realize that when you're in battle, it's nasty, okay? But magnanimous means very generous and forgiving, especially towards, like, somebody that you have now crushed, and they are now below you. They're less powerful than you are. That is magnanimous. It's not lording your power over. It's taking your power and stooping down, like reaching down to a child, you know, or a puppy or whatever, you know, and showing that gentleness, even though you are a giant, that a strong, you know, one of the greatest representations or manifestations of strength in a man is for him to express gentleness. And, you know, that's what it is. And I think he's been exemplary to this point. I think he understands the magnitude. And folks, quite frankly, it's exciting. Michael Moore stood before a huge group. And if you don't know who Michael Moore is, he's made these documentaries that just slaughtered the Bushes. He's a total lefty. He kept predicting Donald Trump was going to win. He's from Michigan, and we all know about Detroit, you know, and Flint, where it's just collapsed, and all this left-wing, liberal, whatever you want to call it, administrations or governing philosophy has devastated this area, just devastated it. And yet these people keep voting Democrat. Why? Because they're in the union, and by golly, Democrats are for the union. The problem with that is the reason Republicans aren't for the union is they're for free market, but they've never had the opportunity to create it. And no matter what happens, folks, one thing I'm going to break the news to you now, no matter what Trump does right, the media is going to have out the machetes, and they're not going to let him, they're never going to give him credit for a job well done. But Michael Moore was saying to a large group of Hillary supporters that Trump was going to win. And he was stating why. He said, "These people have lost their jobs. They've lost their wife. They've lost their house. They've lost everything. And every election they get fed the same old garbage by the same old politicians. Say, I hear you. I'm going to fix it." And they said that finally the one right that they have left, the one thing they have left, is the power to vote. And they're so tired and sick of this stuff that when they cast that vote, they're saying one thing, and it's a two-letter word that we definitely would never use on the radio and probably don't speak much as Christians anyway, and it starts with an F. And he said, that's what they're saying is F you. And I apologize for saying that, but that's what he said. And that he said it's a protest vote. It's just them saying, you know what, we're fed up. And I was talking to another friend of mine, and he said, you know what, Kevin? And he's about 50 years old. He goes, in all my life, he goes, I've never felt so good about one vote I cast as I did about Donald Trump. Because he gave us the ability to just say, heck with you. You know, we're done. We're sick of it. And we've got a guy. Folks, he went through this whole process. He's obligated to no one. He took no money. People say, well, he took money from the RNC. Sure, he did at the very end. But none of it individually given to him. No specific donations to Donald J. Trump. They were given to the Republic National Committee or Convention. And then that money was passed on to him. None of it had any strings attached. He's gutting the lobbyists. He's filling Washington with the real deal. Folks, we got something kind of exciting to look forward to. We're, you know, it's nice. America will be redeemed. Now, people have asked me today and other days, but I just had a question here recently. They say, what is going to happen to the metals under Trump? Well, folks, I'm going to be honest with you what I think. I think we're going to see strong, strong metals performance, and here's why. Although Trump will literally do probably some incredible things, we do have the system against him. Janet Yellen came out, it was either yesterday or the day before, and she instantly said, oh, you know, we're all of a sudden now, folks, they're seeing this growth in the economy, right? And now we got to raise rates. We're going to jack rates up. So there's problem numero uno. And the they're going to try to outpace any growth that is created by Donald Trump with increased interest rates for the simple fact that they want to squelch the economy. So if the economy starts to grow at a certain pace, they're going to make the rates higher. What happens? Everything goes bad then. I'm sorry, but it's a fact. What happens is it gets harder and harder to pay your debt back. Tons of people are on variable rate loans. Tons of credit cards are on variable rate loans. But what's worse is our federal government's debt and all this other stuff. They're going to do everything to load the gun for the next Democratic administration, and they're going to load the gun to try to shut down Trump. We could see some hyperinflation coming, not real, but perceived, because they want him to fail. I apologize, but it's a fact. The other thing that could affect the precious metals prices, I think, during this administration is going to be geopolitical tensions. We are going to be faced with some geopolitical tensions. And that's putting it pretty lightly, isn't it? We have to confront Islam globally. We've got the Democratic National Party, the Democratic Party, putting up for the minority House position a Muslim. Folks, what are we doing in this country? We've lost it. We are embracing, they're showing, oh, look at how we embrace Islam. What is wrong with these people? What's wrong with them, in my mind, they're godless. They're godless and they are fools. They don't know who our enemies are. They have no clue who our enemies are. So they're embracing the enemy. They're bringing the enemy into our house, which is exactly what Hillary's been doing for years. And quite frankly, when I was talking about what Michael Moore said about the guys in Michigan, you know, they know that these people are out of touch with the struggles of the average working man. They don't know. They don't get it. They don't understand. So they're out there doing all this politically ridiculous behavior and embracing Islam, our enemies, folks. I'm sorry, but you know what? That religion is our enemy. And people say, well, there's really good Muslims and they're nice people. Then they need to stand up. They need to form a coalition and they need to isolate themselves and segregate themselves from those who are not so nice and who are destructive terrorists. And they need to say, here's who we are and here's who they are. They need to say those bad guys are called the Muslim Brotherhood. We are called the Gentle Islamists or whatever group they want to form. That's fine with me. If they basically cohesed together and said we are the good ones, then fine. And then they condemned all these other actions. Do you ever hear them condemn the actions? I have heard countless times the media putting words in their mouth, you know, here is, you know, Mahama Lama, whatever her name is, condemning the behavior. And then instead of saying, I condemn it in the name of Allah, they'll say, it's so sad that these people died. We don't want to be persecuted for the actions of others. We're afraid that we're going to be dislocated from our land. It's all about them. It's not about these people are maiming the name and the face of Islam, and they're affecting Allah, which, trust me, folks, I have no, you know, no sympathy for that religion. I personally believe it's a demonic, satanic religion. But if you think about how bad it's been pressed on people, 1.6 billion Muslims in the world, that's why the left wants to embrace them. On a global basis, you have two choices. You are either the strongest world superpower. I'm talking about America now. We can either choose to be the strongest, most powerful superpower in the history of the world, or we can just kind of meld in and blend in and do what Obama did and just tear down our military and try to be one of the guys on the block. Well, what good are we doing? Some of this garbage that Obama did, I mean, this terrible, as Trump said, the worst deal he's ever seen with Iran, giving them $150 billion towards nuclear research and not even getting our four hostages released and paying them this big bribe, which is a fact, and the left argues and on, giving $400 million to get these guys back and saying, well, really, we didn't pay a ransom. What we were doing was returning money that was stuck in some international fund from Iran for the from the 70s with interest. And, you know, come on, folks. And then it was all delivered in pallets of cash. It wasn't wired. It was all secretive, and people got wind of it. I mean, this is why people are fed up. Benghazi went down because Obama had Hillary take down Libya in order to secure all the arms we'd given Gaddafi under agreements that Gaddafi would help us to root out all of these terrorists. We actually participated and encouraged a public beating to death of Muammar Gaddafi. Sad, you know? I mean, it's sad. I don't care who the guy is, but we shouldn't be condoning that kind of behavior. Then what happens is in a democratic political forum, we see a similar thing happen to Hillary. Here's the problem with democracy. If 49% of the people were against, were for Gaddafi, and 51% were against, then the 51% get to kill him. Now, I'm not telling you he was a good man, but what I'm telling you is we need to be smart. And I think Trump's smart. If one of these guys can control their people and he's one of them, who in the world are we to go in and say, you're not doing it right? Do it like we do. How are we doing such a good job on the global front? I have to say, I don't think we are. We are not understanding the Klan mindset. I've been over to the Middle East. I've had the privilege of spending a couple weeks with a general in the Mossad and officers in the Israeli army and you know, PhDs in Israeli history, and on it goes. And these people say simply, America cannot come in and impose democracy on these countries. Back then, before I fully understood Islam, which was about a decade ago, I mean, I kind of did, but not like I do now, they said, well, it's a clan culture. It's might makes right. Whoever's part of the biggest club or clan wins, okay, which that makes perfect sense because we've got ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Sunnis and Shiites and all this stuff. Well, that makes perfect, complete sense. But the part that even makes more sense to me now is the fact that that religion is demonically satanic. It's anti-America, anti-Israel, forever and ever and always will be. That's how our country was formed. As I've discussed, our original army was formed based on Thomas Jefferson trying to meet with the Pasha of Tripoli and being told he was an infidel. We were all infidel, and they had every right to rape our women, to chop our heads off, to kidnap us, use us for slaves. This is the mentality of the Muslim religion. And I'm hoping that Donald Trump's leadership will help us to understand reality now. We've got all this liberal crazy stuff going on. And anyway, long answer to a short question, how will metals do? So for the remainder of the show, one thing I will admit, the name of this show is True Wealth. And for years and years and years, I focused a lot on financial stuff. And now I've kind of gotten all off into politics and, whatever. And some people probably appreciate it and some don't. And I love to bring the Bible in and talk a lot about what it says about money. But I'd like to spend the rest of the show kind of discussing what's going on financially, and how that affects us and, you know, where we're going with everything. And before I touch, I guess I just like to do a financial highlight of why we do what we do and why you should engage in what we do. I mentioned earlier, you know, Joshua talked about people, God's people returning to their tents with great riches and livestock, silver, gold, bronze, iron, and clothes and divide the spoil. You know, I've said there's the only things that are biblically attributed as true wealth that's last permanently through time is gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, and precious stones, okay? I want you to understand there's other things mentioned here, like bronze and iron. Well, how much bronze and iron do you want to haul around for $1,000? You know, you can't do it. I mean, it's got value. There's tons of things that have value, but they're not true wealth. They're not really, really wealth containing or generating. And so the things I mentioned is what it is. Precious metals is a sector. The whole sector has developed an entire market. A lot of that, the primary cash in my market, my business world, which is hundreds of billions of dollars a year or more globally, trillions globally. It's not just gold and silver. It includes balancing your portfolio. It includes numismatic coins, semi-numismatic coins, old U.S. coins. And people hear that and they go, I don't want some collectible penny worth thousands of dollars. I just appraised an estate today and, it was a beautiful set of Indian pennies. And I mean, mint state, you know, and it adds up to thousands of dollars, okay? Well, a lot of people are like, that. I don't want that. I don't want my money tied up in a bunch of uncirculated Indian pennies. And they want precious metals-based assets. And that's primarily when we say semi-numismatic. That's what we do. We look for value. We find old coins that are worth more because of their scarcity or rarity, but you can buy these very, very close to the precious metals content value. So that's what I mean. And when I say numismatic, folks, trust me, we hand select phenomenal coins. It's something we absolutely do. We take very serious. We take a lot of pride in the coins we put in our investment portfolios. It matters to us how you do it, really does. So you need to understand the importance of this and the fact that it's not just a random, you know, and when you see TV shows and listen to Goldline and you see all these ads and they're always telling you to call them and invest in gold, trust me, you're going to have to go through a serious point of rejection as they try to convert you to a bunch of stuff that you shouldn't have, that is overpriced, and it's not worth at all what they're selling you because they're commissioned, and their primary goal goes back to what I said. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. He who sows to his flesh will reap corruption. Well, commissioned salespeople on coins and precious metals have one goal, and that is to feed their flesh. They're trying to get a commission off of you based on profit, so their number one goal is to increase profit. At Coins Plus, we have none of that. No one is on any commission or any form of pay tied into profits whatsoever. They have no motivation to do so. They are paid based on how well they work, how hard they work, how long they work, how productive they are, and how well the store is doing. It's just the way we set ourselves up. So when you hear from these other companies and some people say, hey, I get called from this guy or that guy and he's selling me this, I'm sorry, folks, just tell him no thanks and hang up. You're not going to get them to quit if you just talk to them. It just doesn't work that way. But the Bible goes on, you know, I'll try to be brief. I'm always out of time because I just love my, I love to go off on tangents. But when we talk about riches, I mean, the Bible all throughout talks about the godly and righteous man amassing riches and being blessed with riches. And God tells us clearly that it's important that we don't worship our riches, but it's definitely something we have to deal with. And, you know, it does say, you know, you don't want to put your, seek refuge in your riches and all that stuff. And we know that. We understand that. But in Psalms like 112, it, you know, we've got scripture that says, praise the Lord, how blessed is the man who fears the Lord, who greatly delights in his commandments. His descendants will be mighty on the earth. The generation of the upright will be blessed. And then in verse 3, wealth and riches are in his house, and his righteousness endures forever. God wants us to be healthy and wealthy. Now here I sound like a name it and claim it health and wealth preacher. But God created health and God created wealth and riches. God creates trials and tribulations for us to go through. I'm not saying we're guaranteed anything. I'm not saying that when you're struggling with cancer that the devil's got control of you. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying that this is something that's very real that we need to deal with. Financial responsibility is a huge part of our existence as believers. You know, so we have got to be good stewards with what God gave us. Proverbs, you know, riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. That is what God says about wisdom over and over and over. He says it comes from me. But he also says if you trust in your riches, you'll fall. The crown of the wise is their riches, but the folly of fools is foolishness. And by knowledge, the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. Proverbs 24. By wisdom, a house is built, and by understanding, it is established. And by knowledge, the rooms are filled with what? All precious and pleasant riches. There's all kinds of stuff in the Bible about people having treasures and collectibles, and God knows that. You know, it's familiar. So enough said about that. So basically, we have to be good stewards with what God gave us. So let's talk briefly about where the world's going and what's going on. And it's kind of it's kind of something that's not really changing. As I mentioned a minute ago, the world's politics and economics began a correction on 9/11 of 01. Okay. I kind of touched on in a show here recently the Mystery Babylon concept. Personally, it fits like a glove biblically to me. There's just, you know, the fact that it doesn't look like we think and all that, I don't know. But I can, but not like what we'd expect. And people say, oh, it's the Catholic Church. It doesn't all fill the Catholic Church, you know, as far as consuming all these goods and all that, and I won't get into that. But there, that was the turning point of Earth. Before that, we were going a certain direction and things turned around. Why? Because as God says, do not be mocked. God's not deceived. Whatever you reap, you will sow. We started to, you know, commingle a lack of ethics and morality in greed and business and the Federal Reserve and socialism, everything. We're adopting everything America's against. Trump's name means a final overriding factor or resource. And he also says in Revelation 18 or 17 or 18 about Mystery Babylon, come out of her, my people. I believe with Trump, we may be given an opportunity to choose which side we're on, because I believe we could be steps away from Armageddon. Folks, preserve, you can so easily preserve your wealth in tangible, liquid, anonymous, transportable product that is endorsed, ordained, created by God as true wealth. Throughout the Bible, he says it's true wealth. He gives it the highest compliments. It was his first mention in second chapter of Genesis, right after creation. Christ got it first when he was on earth. We know heaven's bedecked in gold and silver and precious things, and it's made out of them. It's just, it matters. God's made it clear. There's no debate there, I hope. If you think that your cyber dots or cyber electronic, whatever it is at the end of a, you know, I don't even know how to describe what money is today, folks. Electronic money, it's not money. It's just binary code sitting on some mainframe server room somewhere that if it gets zapped with anything, an EMP or anything else, you're out. You're done. I mean, it's over. It's gone. You will not be able to access it. Any kind of an electronic pulse bomb will shut down all communications. I mean, folks, we're literally that close, especially when you have Iran trying to develop a nuke and North Korea claiming not only do they have nukes, but they have the ability to deliver them here through missiles. And here, you know, we have to be realistic. It's not doom and gloom. You own precious metals the way God made it. You can pack them up and haul out. I know Latvian Jews. I've met people who got out of Nazi Germany because they had gold. They got on the underground train, if they call it, where they would pay off Nazi guards at night with gold so that they could keep moving. And this gentleman said 13 of his family members moved 1,300 miles. And he used to bring in a gold coin and show it to me and explain how it saved his family's life. I've had a man in Vietnam show me. We were dealing with a piece of gold one time that brought tears to his eyes because he said that is exactly how me and my mother got out of Vietnam when the North was coming back in and shutting things down. It is true wealth. In all these situations, currency becomes obsolete. It becomes toilet paper, and you can't even pay with it. And if you do, you'll get shot in the head. So that's what we're faced with. And in our world, economic, our geopolitical situation's not exactly pretty right now. The current path of our central banking system, the fiat currency system, folks, is propelling the globe towards an imminent economic and financial collapse, and it's literally exponentially growing. Obama is no accident. Obama is a child of Saul Alinsky. He's a con. He's a deceiver. And he had the greatest influence on spiraling the United States of America towards complete and total bankruptcy. Bill Clinton had a lot to do with it, too. Bill Clinton could have easily got us out of debt when the dot-com craze was roaring. So it's important. Are your assets and wealth properly preserved for the future of financial uncertainty? I mean, you want a little bit in the stock market's fine, but you know, if you want to just preserve it, you don't. People are always like, well, how do you think metals will do? How do you think this? Folks, they're not going down, you know. They might bounce off a floor for a while. These are weird times, you know. They're establishing, the dollar's been ridiculously artificially propped up. Well, that's coming down. The minute the dollar weakens, metals automatically rebound. If we get any inflation, the metals automatically explode. If we have geopolitical turmoil or war in areas known for living on commodities, that's an instant. There's nothing that could happen at this point in time with our debt load and a lost generation and all these. There's nothing that could happen that's going to make the economy boom and be perfect and help metals go away. Trump is like an ER doctor, despite the fact they're trying to say that he's moving into an office that's well under control and everything is great and he's not going to have anything to worry about. Baloney. That's not going to be the case. It's important to understand precious metals-based assets, and I say that because we build portfolios. If you have 401k or IRA, call us 444-0044 or toll-free 877-TAP-COIN. We can either roll you out, we can roll you over. We have every option to our disposal imaginable. There's nothing we can't do financially that you can do elsewhere. And if you want to create your own savings account, where the Bible talks about accumulating riches, folks, like I said, you don't have to come in and spend a small fortune. Everyone's got a budget. If you're making 12 bucks an hour, then just do the best you can with what you got. It's that simple. Do not cut yourself short because you don't have a lot of money. If you think you got to wait till you have 1,000 bucks, don't. Save it at 20 bucks a pop until you have saved 1,000 bucks or whatever that may be. But you got to realize buying precious metals is not investing, because investment involves the risk of real loss. We're dealing with true, real money, true wealth, stuff that's documented, tested, and true from the Bible on. You know, the dollar is collapsing. It's lost all of its spending power over time. We've got smoke screens and deception all over. You know, I mean, I could go on, obviously, and I don't have the time, as usual. But understand me, we're receiving a bunch of deceptive information from the Consumer Price Index. You know, I've seen a lot of evidence that Donald Trump has been exposed to the truth. He came out on the Obama birth certificate thing, and people are like, you know, that was a very hurtful thing you did to President Obama. Well, President Obama didn't ever produce a real birth certificate, so Trump's not that bad of a guy. So anyway, enough of that said, enough. It's Friday, folks. Have a good weekend. Thanksgiving is right around the corner. Give thanks. And give us a call, 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN, or website coinsplus.com. But you know, folks, this is a good time. It's the Trump dump. There's a flat line in the metals. This is a good time. We've got America in good hands, but that doesn't mean that we're going to see the dot-com craze again. So just protect yourself. Preserve. You can do any amount, any time. So come on in. Let us take care of you. We're good at it. We take it serious. We appreciate your business. Thank you again for tuning in. It does mean a lot to me. I really appreciate your loyalty and patience with us, and I do appreciate the business over the years with Coins Plus. Have a great weekend. God bless. Bye-bye. We'll be back Monday. Take care.